debt. It keeps you tossing and turning at night. You can't get away from it. But the truth is, the system is designed to trap you in debt. Insanely high interest credit cards and loans make it nearly impossible to pay off your debt. There's a new way out of the debt trap, Pivotal Debt Solutions. Pivotal Debt Solutions isn't like the old school debt relief companies that string your debt out for years. They have aggressive strategies that can end your debt faster and easier than you thought possible. Pivotal Debt Solutions can cut or even eliminate interest. Find programs to write off your balances so you owe less. Stop those threatening phone calls, and without bankruptcy and without a loan. Bottom line, they find every solution possible to end your debt permanently. Before you do anything, contact Pivotal Debt Solutions first. Talk to them for free. Find out how fast they can help you get out of debt. Visit zapmydebt.com. That's zapmydebt.com. Zapmydebt.com.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. It is Thanksgiving week, a very consequential holiday in some ways. It's interesting how the whole, we had this wonderful dinner with the Indians, and then we killed them all. Narrative, you know, I mean, Columbus Day, we talk about that a lot, right? But not so much on Thanksgiving. And frankly, I think that, you know, there's nothing wrong with bringing it up from time to time. But one of the things that I'm real happy about for Thanksgiving is that we're back in Portland, and all three of our kids live here, and Louisa's mom and brother both live here, and it's just great being with family. And, you know, without having to travel to be with family. So I'm very grateful for that. You know, what you're grateful for, feel free to let us know. The one of the things I'm not grateful for is what the Republicans are doing with regard to the tax bill. And Forbes, of all publications, Forbes published a piece by a contributor, Forbes contributor. It's obviously his opinion, not Forbes's, but still Stan Collender. Just give you a couple of quotes from it. The headline, of course, is GOP tax bill is the end of all economic sanity in Washington. This was published yesterday at 7 a.m. in Forbes magazine. Stan Collender says, if it's enacted, the GOP tax cut now working its way through Congress will be the start of a decades-long economic policy disaster unlike any that has ever occurred in American history. Now, I absolutely agree. And I want to share with you in just a second what Bruce Bartlett, who was the economic go-to guy for both Ronald Reagan and for George Herbert Walker Bush, during both the Reagan administration and the first Bush administration, Bruce Bartlett was, you know, one of their principal economic advisors. And he's saying essentially the same thing that this column in Forbes is saying this morning, which is that this Republican tax cut bill is going to crash the economy. But there's a caveat, there's a but associated with it in Bruce Bartlett's world. And I'll get to that in just a second. But back to this piece in today's Forbes, Stan Collender goes on to say there's no economic justification whatsoever for a tax cut at this time. The U.S. gross domestic product is growing. Unemployment is close to 4% below what is considered commonly full employment. Corporate profits are at record levels and stock markets are soaring. It makes no sense to add any federal government-induced stimulus at all to this private sector-caused economic activity, let alone a tax cut as big as this one. And then he goes on to say the GOP's insanity is compounded by its moving ahead without having any idea of what this policy will actually do to the economy. Now, see, this au contraire. The Republicans know exactly what this is going to do to the economy, and this is part of an anti-democratic, big D democratic, as in anti-democratic party, strategy that the Republicans are pursuing. Now, it may not seem that way right now. You may say, oh, geez, the Republicans, they're giving these giant tax breaks to billionaires. The average person who earns $50,000 or less is going to see their taxes go up and go up substantially over the next 10, 15 years. But Republicans know that. I'll get to that in just a second. They say, so the piece in Forbes wraps up. In other words, the Republican tax bill may be enacted without anyone who votes for it having any understanding of the damage it could do to our economy. They have hopes, wishes, and prayers, but in reality, nothing beyond the economic equivalent of pagan superstition. No, they know exactly what they're doing. They know exactly why they're doing it, and they have done this before. This is not a brand new game. And this is where Bruce Bartlett has this brilliant piece in The Guardian today. It's titled, Republican Tax Cuts Will Hurt Americans and Democrats Will Pay the Price. And what Bruce Bartlett lays out, he doesn't mention the two Santa Claus theory at all. But the whole shtick here is the two Santa Claus theory. And you'll recall the old two Santa Claus theory that Jude Winiski proposed back in the 1970s, as I recall, it was 78 or 79, because Reagan was the first president to adopt it. And the two Santa Claus theory was when Republicans are in power, become Santa Claus, be the Santa Claus of tax cuts, give things away to people, and run up the debt. So that when Democrats come into power, you can yell and scream about the debt and force them to shoot their Santa Claus, which is federal spending. Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, unemployment insurance, the Children's Health Insurance Program, Obamacare, whatever it may be. These are the Democratic Party's Santa Claus. You know, they're the gifts that they give away. So what you want to do is tie their hands. You want to handcuff the Democrats so that they are forced to pursue a Republican agenda. They are forced to cut spending. They are forced to balance budgets. You know who the last two presidents were to balance budgets? Jimmy Carter and Bill Clinton. And they did it in large part because the Republicans had set up a situation where they pretty much had to. Now, Bill Clinton at least got to raise taxes to balance the budget, and it kicked off a huge economic boom. In fact, all the empirical evidence that I can find indicates that when you raise taxes, you stimulate the economy. When you raise taxes on rich people, you stimulate the economy, which is the opposite of what the Republicans are planning to do. And when you raise taxes on working people, which is what the Republican tax plan will do, then you depress the economy. Michael Linden this morning, at Michael S. Linden. Holy moly, new CBO report finds that the sneak attack on healthcare and the GOP tax bill will hammer households making less than $50,000 a year. Absolutely hammer them. And this is how much distribution of changes in federal spending under the proposal, excluding the outlay portion of refundable credits. This is an actual chart from the Congressional Budget Office. And the 2027 number, well, if you make less than $10,000, you are going to be hurt to the tune of $1,900 next year, or the year after next, $5,900 in 2021, and $9,700 a year by 2027. So your taxes are continuously going to go up, and your benefits are going to go down. If you make $10,000 to $20,000 a year, and by 2027, you'll be losing $9,700 a year. If you make $20,000 to $30,000 a year, you'll only lose $8,700 a year by 2027. If you make $30,000 to $40,000 a year, you'll only lose $2,900 a year by 2027 under the Republican tax plan. And if you make $40,000 to $50,000 a year, you will only lose $1,180 a year. If you make $50,000 to $75,000, you make $60. If you make $100,000 to $200,000, you make $1,600 and so on. You know, so anyhow, the bottom line is that the top end gets helped. So, you know, what Bruce Bartlett is saying is that he says, and he says it explicitly, He says, you know, why are Democrats and independents can't figure out why Republicans are pushing this insanely unpopular tax bill. I mean, it really is. It's got a popularity rating in the 20 or 30% range. Why would they do it? Bartlett says the answer is the Republicans are pushing the tax cut at breakneck speed precisely because they know they are probably going to lose next year and in 2020 as well. The tax cut, once enacted, however, will bind the hands of Democrats for years to come, forcing them to essentially follow a Republican agenda of deficit reduction and prevent any action on a positive Democratic platform or program. The result will be a steady erosion of support for Democrats that will put Republicans back in power within a few election cycles. And I think Bruce Bartlett is absolutely right. This is the whole strategy. He talks about how 30 years ago, two Swedish economists, Thorsten Persson and Lars Svensson, laid out how this works. It was published in the Quarterly Journal of Economics in 1989. And it was about how one conservative legislator can flip all, can just destroy the plans of all the progressives. It's because of something called time inconsistency. We'll talk about that after the break.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So why is it that, how is it that Republicans can get away with saying, oh, Obama doubled the deficit when Obama had nothing to do with that? It was George W. Bush. I'll tell you all about that. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Tim Ryan, the congressman from Ohio, who is a meditator, by the way, and his constituents know it and like it and approve of it. He's Tim and I both gave a talk. I met him in Los Angeles some years ago at a Marianne Williamson event, and he was talking about meditation, which was really cool. Anyhow, he sent out an email to presumably, you know, friends of Tim Ryan's. I've never contributed to his campaign, but I've been on his list apparently since we had dinner together. Anyhow, the Republican tax plan allows corporations, Tim Ryan writes, to deduct the cost of shipping jobs overseas from their taxes, literally making it easier and more profitable to move American jobs to places like China. After what Trump promised working people during the campaign in places like Michigan, Wisconsin, and my hometown of Youngstown, Ohio, this tax plan is an insulting joke. And then he quotes Richard Trumka, the president of the AFL-CIO. It is astounding that a tax bill that will encourage offshoring is even under consideration. And economist Gene Sperling in The Atlantic, he said the president maintains his proposal would limit offshoring. A major provision of it would do just the opposite. Meanwhile, Nick Kristof, writing in The New York Times, it's so hard to be a billionaire these days. A new yacht can cost $300 million. The investment income on, say, a $4 billion fortune is only a mere $1 million a day. Thank God for this lifeline to struggling tycoons. And it's carefully crafted to focus the benefits on the truly deserving, the affluent who earn their tax breaks with savvy investments in politicians. Eliminating the estate tax, which will help 5,500 Americans, one-fifth of 1% of all Americans who die annually, ending the tax. And it actually doesn't help the people who die. It helps the people who were members of the Lucky Sperm Club, who were born to them. Ending the tax would help upstanding people like the Trumps, who owe their financial success to brilliant life choices such as picking the uterus in which they were conceived. He says, now it's fair to complain that the tax plan overall doesn't give needy billionaires quite as much as they deserve. For example, the top 1% receive only a bit more than a 25% of the total tax cuts in the Senate bill. Really? Only 25 times their share of the population? After all those dreary $5,000 plate dinners supporting politicians, they could do better than that, right? And he goes on. We risk soul-sucking dependency if we always set kids' broken arms. Maybe that's why congressional Republicans haven't bothered to renew funding for CHIP, the child health insurance program serving almost 9 million American children. Ditto for the maternal and home visiting programs that are gold standard for breaking cycles of poverty and also haven't been renewed by Republicans in Congress. We mustn't coddle American toddlers. Congressional Republicans understand we can't do everything for everybody, so we must focus on the most urgent needs, such as those of hand-to-mouth billionaires. Tax code subsidizes moguls with private jets, while the charity interest tax break gives a huge tax discount to striving private equity zillionaires. Meanwhile, a $13 billion annual subsidy for corporate meals and entertainments gives ditch diggers the satisfaction of buying champagne for financiers. Christoph points out, this may have something to do with our having the first Congress with a majority of millionaires in it, the richest Congress we've ever had. So he says, if poor kids have to suffer, might as well make poor seniors suffer as well. That's called a balanced policy. So we're going to cut money out of Medicare as well. Amazing. Susan in Lutz, Florida. Hey, Susan, what's on your mind today?
Hi, from Lutz.
Lutz. Hey, Susan.
Lutz. That's the way we pronounce it down here, anyway. Mm-hmm. Well, I've been doing taxes during tax season for many, many years, sort of a little side thing going on there. Mm-hmm. And I've done it for small businesses as well as individuals. Believe it or not, I like taxation. Isn't that strange? But at any rate, this is absolutely this is so bad, so dangerous, so terrible. I don't even have words for it. So I'm just going to skip the description of it. But we really have to understand what's going on. And you've begun now to allude to it. It's really beyond people who don't care about what happens to other people.
Yeah.
Relevant. What it is obviously a certain group of people who have gained control of just about everything that goes on. And they're lackeys. That's all it is. The rich, the super rich, want to get more power and be more rich. And those people and places like the Senate, the House of Representatives are their lackeys because they're not the super rich.
Yeah.
And if they don't do what the super rich want, you know, your ordinary congressman, what's he going to do? Go back home and be a farmer or
yeah? And whatever. What Bruce Bartlett is pointing out is that from the Republican point of view, this is a twofer. On the one hand, they get to do exactly what the super rich paid them to do in Congress, which is cut their taxes.
Yes.
On the other hand, by cutting the taxes for the super rich, they're forcing future politicians, and this is on the assumption that Republicans are going to start losing elections fairly soon, they're forcing future politicians to cut services even further for average working people, which
exactly.
will cause them to blame the Democrats. And
exactly.
so, I mean, this is Judah Winiski's two Santa Claus theory on steroids, Susan.
So the question is, so what do we do?
Right.
And my thought, as I thought about it, is, first of all, the Republicans have been, the Democrats have been wasting, in my opinion, wasting a lot of time arguing with if you've been watching the hearings, with certain arcane rules in the tax code and changing this and changing little gears and widgets and whatever. What I would like to see is the Democrats stand up and start offering amendments that are outrageous, such as passing amendments to have no taxation of ordinary taxpayers whose gross incomes are below $90,000 a year. So that basically by the end of this, because they're not winning anything. I mean, the Republicans are giving them absolutely no ground whatsoever.
Yeah.
So if they at least can make a splash, and most people don't even know what the Democrats are even trying to do because it's so kind of minuscule. If they could get up there and make a big enough splash to point out what's really going on and try to pass an amendment, which they won't pass, but they'll really stir up a lot of controversy, start passing amendments such as start at 250,000. No one who grosses under 250 will pay any taxes. Oh, that's not good enough. Then go 245. 230, you know.
Yeah, I get it, Susan. I think it's a great idea. Although I would think that things that are more visible and more discussable. That's nice, but that's going to make them seem a little cranky.
As well,
what if they said
well.
No company can get a tax break that does any manufacturing outside the United States?
Yeah, stuff like that. Right, exactly.
I mean, very simple, very straightforward. No tax breaks for any company that manufactures goods from outside the United States, or no tax break for any company that imports goods into the United States for resale, which would be like Walmart, things like that.
You want to show that the Republicans have got their basic others thinking that, well, maybe we'll get a tax cut, you know, small people.
Right.
As you said, they're not only getting a cut, they're going to get hope.
Oh, yeah. And Susan, I thank you for the call. Thank you so much.
You.
And thanks for watching us on Free Speech. The essence of this and the conversation that Susan and I were just having, this is about, you know, strategy, right? How do the Democrats do this? And so far, the Democrat strategy has been the usual Democratic strategy, which is tell the truth, right? What is this really? And I frankly think instead of that as a strategy, it doesn't work, right? Because you're going up against these nonprofit so-called committees that are owned and paid for by billionaires that are running ads on television, lying to average working people, telling them that they're going to get $2,000 in tax breaks if the Republicans pass this legislation, if they're average taxpayers. Now, it's a lie, or maybe it's like, falls into the old Abe Lincoln or Mark Twain or whoever said, lies, damn lies and statistics. It's not accurate, but people are believing it because they see it on television and because the billionaires have put millions of dollars into this campaign. Mira in Los Angeles. Hey, Mira, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I have a very simple question.
Mm-hmm.
Should the Democrats win and should this bill pass, why are they bound by it? This is a law made by men. Why can't it be broken? It's not God's law. It's not like, especially if it's meant for making people's lives better, why are they bound by it?
Bound by the tax cut?
Yeah, I heard you
because in order to raise taxes, they would have to overcome a filibuster in the Senate. And the assumption is that even if Republicans lose control of both the House and the Senate, that they're not going to lose control of the Senate to the tune of 60 votes, that the Democrats are not going to have a filibuster-free or proof Senate like they did during 74 days of the first year of the Obama administration, 74 business days. They're not going to have that. And so, as a result, the Republican tax cuts will, in all probability, stay in place, and the Democrats are going to be stuck having, as was the case during the Clinton administration, as was the case to a large extent during the Obama administration, the Democrats are going to be stuck having to make terrible, hard decisions within the context of the spending framework that they have and the tax revenue that they have. And in the midst of all of it, the Republicans are going to be constantly screaming about the debt and the deficit as they did throughout the Obama administration, as they did throughout the Clinton administration, as they did throughout the Carter administration. They never scream about debt and deficits when there's a Republican in the White House. They always do it when it's Democrats. So that's why.
Let's assume in 2020 we have a Democrat as a president. Can't they roll it back?
No, the president doesn't have the... No, the president doesn't control legislation. Legislation, all appropriation, all spending, and all taxes have to be passed by Congress. The president merely signs them. He can't do that himself. So that's why. Mira, thank you for the call. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
More of your calls right after this. Everybody's talking about superfoods, those nutritionally dense foods that are especially beneficial to your health. Did you know that one of the most powerful superfoods you can put into your body is beets? They're loaded with an important nutrient that increases your blood flow, which increases your energy. But who wants to eat a pile of beets every day? Not me. But now you can get the energy benefits of beets in a powerful, concentrated superfood drink, Superbeets. Only Superbeets is made from beets grown to exacting standards, then concentrated into superfood crystals. Superbeets promotes the body's own natural ability to produce healthier circulation for increased energy and stamina all day long. So if you want the benefits of a powerful superfood, call 800-568-9889 or go to tomsbeets.com. With your first order, get another 30-day supply of Superbeets for free, plus indicator strips to see how Superbeets is working for you, and free shipping. So call 800-568-9889. Or go to tomsbeets.com today. That's 800-568-9889, tomsbeets.com on the interwebs.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And on the line with us, Mark Ruffalo, the actor and filmmaker. His website, facebook.com/Mark Ruffalo. You can tweet him at Mark Ruffalo. Mark, welcome back to the program.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Great talking with you. You're all over this issue of Jerry Brown and his legacy, the UN Climate Change Conference in Bonn Last week, Jerry Brown was, I believe, interrupted by protesters saying, leave it in the ground. What's going on here?
Well, Jerry Brown right now is basically a self-described climate hero. He's leading California into this new era, this new climate era of leaving it in the ground or leaving fossil fuels and moving to a renewable energy paradigm. And at the same time, he has led California to be the third largest oil producer in the nation.
Now, is that the result of policies that he put in place, or is that just the natural result of 100 years or whatever?
Let's put it this way. I mean, there's a legacy industry in California, and it is 70 years old.
Right.
And so it's something that's entrenched. It's politically entrenched. It's politically entrenched in the United States. Sure. California is the microcosm of what we're seeing happening in the United States and in the world at large. You know, we've relied on fossil fuel, and we should be grateful to fossil fuels. They brought us through the Industrial Revolution, the Technological Revolution, and now they brought us to the day where we can actually leave them behind. Mm-hmm. But Jerry Brown is in a particularly good position right now to actually be the leader of doing that. And what you're seeing happening is his constituents, the constituents of the world, are asking more from our leaders who are calling themselves climate leaders. Whether you're Jerry Brown or Angela Merkel, we have to start addressing the demand side of climate change, which is pulling this stuff out of the ground. And if we're going to even follow the Paris agreements, as Jerry Brown said he would do, it's impossible that he can keep pulling so many fossil fuels out of the ground. I mean, California won't even ban hydrofracking and drilling in neighborhoods, you know?
Yeah.
Last year, we took a group of actors and producers and writers on what we call the toxic tour of Los Angeles, where they have more lenient restrictions on fossil fuel drilling in neighborhoods than they do in Denton, Texas.
Yeah, I think that was the one where Norman Lear and I showed up, and
yes,
and
that's where
you were there. Yeah,
that was
right around the time of Porter Ranch.
Yes, it was right at the time of Porter Ranch.
Yeah,
and we interviewed the Stand LA, which is Stand Against Neighborhood Drilling. Mm-hmm. This is a justice movement, really at its core. And what you see happening is the people who are on the front lines of fighting this, the indigenous people, people of color, these are the people who are directly in harm's way right now. And so they're asking more from our leaders. What we see happening throughout the world right now is a sort of we're denying the status quo. Whether you're talking about sexual predation, misogyny, sexism, or you're talking about fossil fuels and fighting climate change, we have to move past the status quo. And leaders like Jerry Brown are on the front line of the status quo. We are going after these types of people because they are the leaders that are most likely to make the change that needs to happen.
Right, but this
Jerry Brown. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. I in fact, finish your thought, and I'll come back to
it. Jerry Brown's in a really good position. He has the environmental record. He is putting himself out there, We do have to have a little bit of sympathy for the guy who gets up at Bond and he's shouted down by people saying, you got to keep it in the ground, dude. You can't be a climate leader while at the same time being the third largest contributor to climate change in the United States.
Yeah.
And he's in a great position to do it because he's no longer at the throes or at the pleasure of the fossil fuel industry in California. He can actually start to draw this down.
Because this is his last year in political office, you mean?
Yeah, this yeah. is last year, and he can, you know, he's not beholden to the fossil fuel industry anymore.
Right.
And we're not asking him to shut it off overnight, which is, you know, his talking point is, well, if I shut it off overnight, you know, we'll kill thousands of jobs. It's like no one's telling you to shut it off overnight, Jerry Brown.
Right.
We're asking you to start to implement a plan that draws it down, just like the rest of the world is doing, who's taking climate change seriously.
So there's
that's what we're asking.
There's an interesting political dynamic here, and that is that you and I, we're talking with Mark Ruffalo, actor, activist, all around brilliant guy. We're talking about basically challenging a good Democrat, a good progressive politician, in a way that, you know, hopefully can be done in a way that doesn't, you know, create an internecine warfare inside the Democratic Party in California. I mean, is that not a consideration?
Of course it is. I mean, but, you know, at any other point, one would be much more, you know, gentler.
Yeah.
But we're talking about,
you know, the climate's more important than politics. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we can't play around anymore. And this is good policy for the Democrats.
Right.
This is what their constituency expects of them. And the reason the Democrats are having such a hard time is because somewhere along the line in their neoliberal thinking, they have forgotten what they were meant to do. And that was to it's justice. It's to take care of the little guy. We don't need them fighting for corporations. We need them fighting for us.
Yep.
And that's really what this is about. When you see people siding on the fossil fuels based on all the evidence that we have against climate change, it's money that's making them dumb. That is clouding their vision. They're clouding their moral vision. And it's the writing's on the wall. The Democrats we all got to come this way, just Republicans too. This is where all the new economy is. This is where all the new wealth making is. This is where the world is moving, and you're an idiot and a fool to try to hold on to the past at this point when everything is telling you to change.
Yeah, absolutely. So in the last minute or so we've got here, Mark, you live in California. You're almost 2 minutes. You live in California. You're familiar with California politics. I don't. I'm not.
California now. I live in New York.
Oh, okay. My apologies. Well, if you're familiar with California politics, and if not, just say
I
don't.
I'm very.
Okay, great. So my question is: this a Jerry Brown issue, or is this a the Democratic Party now essentially controls California politics? So is this a Democratic Party / California politician problem? A more systemic. I mean, does it need to be attacked at the level of the Assembly and the Senate too?
This is happening on every single level in every single place in California. And it's a grassroots movement, and we're not going away. We're only going to be stepping up this rhetoric. We're only going to be demanding more from our leaders. You just saw it happen with SB 100. SB 100 was going to take the state to 100% renewable energy.
Right.
We were like three votes shy of that, bringing it to the House.
Amazing.
For a debate. I mean,
Mark,
and I promise you, it will pass in January.
Amen. We're hitting a hard break here, but I just want to let people know, sure. You also executive produced a short film on this, right?
Yes. Dear Governor Brown.
Hang on just a second.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Where, Mark Ruffalo, can people find your short film on this, Dear Governor Brown?
If they go to www.deargovernorbrown.org, they can find it, or just do a simple Google search, Dear Governor Brown. It
lays
all this out beautifully.
Thank you so much. We'll be back. Welcome back. Boy, what a day. Maine in Chicago. Hey, Maine, what's on your mind today?
Hey, how you doing, Tom?
Fine.
Yeah, okay. That economic thing that you, spoke about in detail, would this not be with voodoo or trickle-down economics being, you know, the motivation? I mean, if we could reverse that and say from the bottom up and out of the middle that, this economic happening that you were speaking about wouldn't come about if we would get rid of trickle down economics and the Electoral College.
Well, I think I think it's a step beyond that. I mean, the trickle down economics is not the evil itself. It's the weapon of evil. The evil is that our political discourse, our dialogue, our conversation in the United States about what works, what doesn't, what's true, what's not, you know, is trickle-down economics a phony baloney theory or is it something that's actually credible, that dialogue is not happening in our corporate media, in our mainstream media, and or it is to some very small extent. And you know, pretty much on MSNBC and maybe occasionally on CNN. And that's, you know, what we're really looking at. The big issue, I think, is oligarchy. It's that our, you know, it's that you've got three people who have more wealth than the bottom 50% of Americans that in the top of the top 10,000 or 20,000 people, the very, very extremely mind-bogglingly wealthy in America. Now they're reaching out to buy more and more media properties, more and more influencing vehicles. You know, it's just the entire structure of American business is increasingly being realigned and reorganized to serve the interests of the very, 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 very mind-bogglingly wealthy. And that's a problem. It's a big problem, Maine.
Right. But that came about through trickle-down less is more Reaganomics.
Sure.
By reversing
and voter suppression.
Wouldn't we reverse all this that you're speaking about?
Well, yeah, but I think that the first thing we need to do is show trickle-down economics for the scam it is and then point out that there's a reason why this scam has been run on us. It's profitable for the billionaire class.
Right. Well, and this is what is about to be shown should this tax bill get passed.
Yeah.
I'm not, like I said, I'm not very well on economics and stuff like that, but I follow what you're saying, how they don't mind losing because it's already set up for the for whoever gets in office that they'll have to follow this tax plan.
Yeah, and it's
no
gonna,
matter how much they want to do for the people.
Yep, and it's going to totally screw basically the next decade. And it's already, you know, set up to do that. I mean, the really, really bad stuff, the moderately bad stuff starts kicking in 2018 and 2020, just in time for Democrats to take power and then be basically with handcuffs on. And then it gets really bad after 2026, which, you know, another election year. So, yeah, spot on. Maine, thanks for the call. Well said. John in Minneapolis. Hey, John, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, I just wanted to point out that Jerry Brown had told a bunch of indigenous activists at the COP that he wanted to put them in the ground.
Come on. That was they were shouting him down while he was trying to give a speech.
You know, sorry, but that's a pretty tacky thing to say.
It's extremely tacky, but he was making a joke about shutting them up.
Actually, you know, if you're going to talk over me, I'm not going to call back because it's incredibly rude.
Yeah, well, John, I'm sorry I'm incredibly rude. Welcome to Talk Radio. Michael in St. Paul, Minnesota. Hey, Michael, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom, thanks for taking my call. You know, trying to pick up on the Jude Lewinsky, you know, two Santa Claus theory and the Republican tax bill. I have a question on messaging, and I haven't heard anybody else make it. And my thought was, why aren't we as Democrats and on the left also screaming about deficits when Republicans are in power? I mean, can't we turn this whole message on its ear and say, you know, no deficit spending without, say, infrastructure spending or something so that we can try to get what we want, but actually we might get some of the Tea Party people and the fiscal conservatives to stand with us on this
except that you won't. You know? The Tea Party people and the fiscal conservatives have consolidated as basically a tribal faction. And if the Republican Party, bringing people in by saying, you know, I mean, all you have to do is watch Fox News for an hour and you absolutely get this. You've got a bunch of millionaire people on Fox News, people who are making literally millions of dollars a year, sitting around talking about NASCAR and eating grits and just, you know, like they're just average folks. The Duck Dynasty perfected this, right? These Ivy League educated multimillionaires who are pretending to be just folks down here in Louisiana. And so that tribal aspect of you know, we're Republicans, we're Democrats is not going to go away, number one. Number two,
no.
When Democrats start arguing against deficits or start arguing that deficit spending is a bad thing, they're buying into and promoting the principal frame, the main frame that Republicans use to cut spending. And so that's like shooting yourself in the foot. That's like agreeing with the other guys. And,
well,
and go ahead.
I don't disagree with you on that, but you know, Obama spent, you know, 8 years paying down, you know, reducing the deficit, and can't we argue that that's our legacy, and that them blowing it up, because we know they're going to use it as a stick against us to bash us over the head as soon as we take power again. So I just feel like there'd be a way we could frame this that we could, you know, if we're out in the streets doing the same thing that we're doing, but instead of saying, you know, hands too small, you can't build a wall, you say something that some of these conservatives are going to stand up and go, oh, yeah, no more deficit spending. That's what we are always against. And yeah. I don't know.
I think if you're going to go after Republican policies using language that Republicans understand, I think that probably welfare for big corporations, welfare and tax breaks for very, very wealthy people, you know, pointing those out, pointing how they work,
sure.
Pointing out that, you know, a big chunk of this tax bill is a tax cut on private jets, the tax bill does all these wonderful things for companies, for pass-through businesses, and does basically, you know, raises taxes on people earning under $50,000 a year, plus, you know, screws with our healthcare system. So, you know,
yeah.
But, this is the kind of messaging discussion that the Democratic Party needs to be having more of,
no joke.
Frankly. Yeah, because it really is the message. Michael, I got to move along, but thank you for the call. Mina in St. Paul, Nebraska. Hey, Mina, what's up?
Oh, Tom, I have sad, sad news. The Nebraska Public Service Commission this morning approved 3-2 the Keystone Pipeline.
Yes, I read it.
The two women voted against it, and the three men voted for it.
And I think the two women are Democratic appointments, aren't they?
It could be. I don't know. Yeah. One thing that I got from Credo this morning, or no, Greenpeace, I think it was, that they did not approve the route.
Yeah, they did the alternate
route. Wanted.
Yeah, they approved an alternate route.
Is that the one that just leaked 210?
Well, that
gallons of oil.
The leak happened where the pipe has already been laid. This is, you know, approving a route to go lay the pipe because they haven't finished the construction. So
right,
that's the
what
difference.
What
we
had said at one time was, go ahead and put it where KXL1 is. Mm-hmm. Don't bring it down through central Nebraska where we live.
Right. No, it's gonna. I frankly don't know off the top of my head, Mina, exactly where the alternative route is or what the significant differences are between that and the original proposed route for Nebraska. But just the fact that it got approved. Greg Palast has a great piece today. I believe it's on his website. He sent it to me in email, and we're going to be talking with him about this tomorrow. He points out that Koch Industries has a refinery down in Texas that is designed to deal with heavy, dirty crude, which up until now they've been importing from Venezuela. And they're trying to get this pipeline from Canada down to the Koch refinery down near the coast so that the Kochs can refine this fuel for the Canadian oil is about $1 a gallon less than, or maybe it's $1 a barrel less than the Venezuelan oil. And so the Kochs will make a higher profit, according to Greg Palast. I don't have independent verification of that, but he says this is the big thing behind this. We'll discuss it with him tomorrow. But there's a bunch of very, very wealthy people making a lot of money basically pumping carbon into the atmosphere, and it just seems like it's a very, very destructive thing. Mina, thank you for the call. Randy in Ottawa, Iowa. Hey, Randy, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Originally, I was provoked to enter in the conversation today because I felt that there is a cyclical mechanism behind the Republicans' initiatives to go back into deficit spending and how George Bush had used the supplemental budget to keep the war debt off of the annual budget and things
right.
like that. And then when Obama came in, he put it on budget, And basically, I think that was one of the things, that $1.4 trillion in debt that set up the Congress to lose. But it could have been Obamacare as well. So my point being that the conversation has evolved, and others have brought up that the Democrats need to be pointing this out, that it's their future, it's our future, and whatever they have to do short of standing up on a billboard, camping up on a billboard to make their point about what's actually going on with this.
Yeah, I'm with you. I would love to see the Democrats doing more creative theater kind of stuff. It's something we really need. Randy, well said. Thanks for the call. We'll be right back. It's coming up on 15 minutes before the hour. We'll be checking in with Talk Media News to find out what's going on in the world in just a few seconds. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Back with Talk Media News and more of your calls right after this. When was the last time you looked forward to sitting at your desk all day? Since getting my new X chair, not only am I enjoying the time spent in my desk much more than ever, but I can't believe how much more productive I'm being. My X chair is unbelievably stylish, and thanks to all the ways that you can personalize it, it literally molds itself to my body. Trust me, this is not your grandfather's office chair. And because I don't need to keep having to take breaks or to stretch my back, I'm getting more done in a day than ever before. If you spend a lot of time in your office chair every day, then you need to try the X chair. In fact, here's a terrific deal just for my listeners. The makers of X chair want you to feel the X chair difference for yourself. So if you go to xchairtom.com, that's the letter X chair, T-H-O-M.com, not only will they knock $100 off the price, but they'll even throw in a free footrest if you use the promo code Tom. Just go to xchairtom.com now. I love my X chair, and you will too. So check out xchairtom, that's xchairtom.com. Check out xchairtom.com, and be sure to use T-H-O-M as the promo code for your $100 discount. Welcome back. Let's check in with Talk Media News and find out what's going on in the world today. This report brought to you by GoatsForTheOldGoat.com and Ellen Ratner's new book, Loving What You Do. On the line with us from New York, Luke Vargas, Talk Media News' new UN reporter. Hey, hey, Luke.
Hey, Tom. Great to be with you.
Thank you for joining us. So today, Donald Trump labeled North Korea a state sponsor of terrorism. What terrorism? Is Kim Jong-un sending money to ISIS?
It's a great question when you ask what terror, because the criteria that has been set forth to date from the administration fails to meet the actual legal definition of what the State Department uses to classify, to make such a determination. According to U.S. Rules, you are supposed to have committed repeated instances of terror or providing support for multiple acts of terrorism. The only thing that was cited by the administration today was the assassination of Kim Jong-un's brother earlier this year, Kim Jong-nam.
That's not terrorism.
At the Malaysian airport, which looks much more like a murder.
That's not terrorism.
Like, I mean, act of international terrorism.
Yeah, that's what's the word? Fratricide? The murder of your brother?
Sure.
So the Trump administration is using this terrorism label, presumably to be able to bite harder by way of sanctions into North Korea. Is that going to work for American companies only, or is that going to work all around the world, or is that going to blow up in Trump's face?
It's a little unclear exactly what type of sanctions the administration wants permission to be able to enact that they can't already enact or have not already enacted. And looking at the way this designation of being a state sponsor of terror actually affects North Korea, it's unclear to me if this really moves the ball anywhere. I mean, once you're designated a state sponsor of terrorism, you can't get U.S. development assistance. Okay, we weren't doing that. You can't sell arms to the country. We weren't selling arms to North Korea. And it limits the types of North Korean exports that the U.S. can import, which we're already not doing. It does, we're told by the president that the Treasury Department tomorrow will unveil broad, tough new sanctions on North Korea. But again, Trump and his predecessors, even though Trump likes to call this maximum power, we've seen successive U.S. administrations try to push, the line on sanctions. So again, it does not appear clear to me A, why they made this designation, and two, exactly what it does, other than make President Trump look tough. I mean, he says this was a long overdue designation. He's, you know, kind of looking back to that 2002 speech from George W. Bush, in which he labeled North Korea part of the axis of evil, along with Iraq and Iran at that time. So again, he seems to think that, you know, maybe this is a designation that makes him look tough compared to President Obama. But again, just the assassination of Kim Jong-nam doesn't seem to meet the criteria, nor does the death of Otto Warmbier, which is the other thing the administration was looking to cite in making this designation.
Yeah. So this is really just chest thumping on the part of Donald Trump, it seems. NAFTA talks, the U.S., Canada, Mexico talking about the North American Free Trade Agreement. Anything coming out of that?
They're moving along in Mexico City, though I guess moving along again implies progress, which we've seen very little of. This is the fifth round of talks, and what we're hearing is that the top officials from the U.S. on trade, as well as the top trade officials from Mexico and Canada, didn't even bother to come to these, that there's so much distance between the parties now. And this is important because the goal was to try and wrap these things up, actually at the end of this year. That has already been pushed. But the real fear is you've got presidential elections in Mexico next summer, and the leading candidate, who is not the of the same party as the current president, Peña Nieto, is very much disinclined to kind of renegotiate NAFTA. And so the fear is that if this pushes too late, that the Mexican government will be, you know, embroiled in these elections with a big anti-trade party coming into power, and that this might all get screwed, that NAFTA could just fall apart. And we've gotten to the point now where U.S. businesses, namely the Chamber of Commerce in the United States, which is not typically that critical of Republican presidents, to say the least, is freaking out. I mean, you saw a big delegation from the U.S. Chamber of Commerce go down to Mexico this week. You saw some of the largest auto executives in the United States also go down. 75 members of Congress, Democrats and Republicans, signed a letter over the weekend telling President Trump to back off some of his foremost demands here. And what we're essentially seeing is the administration just not giving in to all that lobbying effort, right, particularly on what we call rules of origin. That is, the Trump administration is asking Mexico and Canada to increase the amount of any car that has to be made in both the United States and within the NAFTA zone altogether in order for it to be sold in the United States. And right, the numbers they want are dramatically higher than people predicted the U.S. would come out with. I think they want 50% of a car to be made in the United States,
yeah,
which is a number that wouldn't work for most cars.
Right.
And they want something like 82.5% of a car altogether to be made within the NAFTA zone. And looking at a lot of the vehicles on American roads right now,
they don't qualify.
Meet either of them.
I actually,
that is scaring the auto industry a lot.
Yeah, I actually support the Trump administration's efforts on this. If the NAFTA talks fail, we just keep the status quo, right?
No, not necessarily. It's possible this could just sort of end, especially depending on what the outcome is in the Mexican.
So Trump would have to declare that he was pulling out of NAFTA, though, wouldn't he?
Right, though he has been open to that in the past. It is sort of still seen as a third rail, but he has not disavowed that. And I guess the final thing I'll say about this is the other thing that's worrying folks is the fact that the U.S. wants there to be 5-year sunset clauses on NAFTA going forward. So that, and that is worrying Mexico and Canada, which say, look, I mean, we have so many elections. America is now politically unpredictable. This agreement would essentially always be up for renegotiation at any one time instead of sort of letting it kick into effect and
a continuous football,
so again,
political football.
Progress.
Finally, Angela Merkel, she failed to organize a government. We're going to hit a break here in just a while. Here it is. You got a real 10 seconds, Luke?
The possibility here is bad. Far right parties could claim that this is their opening. If the, you know, moderates can't lead, that's what's scaring me.
So we could see a rise of the far right like we've seen in Turkey or in Hungary or Poland now.
Exactly right.
This would
we'll
be
see what happens in the next few days.
Bad thing. Luke Vargas with Talk Media News. Thank you, Luke.
Thank you.
Good talking with you. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you and George in Chicago. Hey, George, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom.
Hey, George.
Excuse me. Mike, one question is the Santa Claus theory.
since the Republican tax proposal will ruin the next two Democratic elections, why aren't the Democrats smart enough not to run if the tax proposal passes and let the Republicans eat it?
Because
taxes, being the sly ones, and the Republicans being the dumb ones, you know.
Yeah.
So it's like them, the Republicans are the roadrunner, and the Democrats are the coyote, for crying out loud.
Yeah. In this case, George, saying we're not going to play the game because it's not working to our benefit.
Instead, the
Democratic Party needs to be doing, George, is they need to be pointing out exactly what I was talking about earlier, that this so-called tax cut is only a tax cut for billionaires and big corporations if you look beyond the 10-year window. The individual tax cuts for individual people go away by and large. And
your idea is great, but if it goes through, we're finished.
No, we're not finished. I mean, you know, subsequent legislatures
like
can change it. But yeah, it's going to be really, really tough unless the Democrats can get a filibuster-proof Senate. Absolutely. George, thanks for the call. Ann in Hammond, Indiana. Hey, Ann.
Hi.
Hey, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Very well, thank you. What's on your mind today?
I've never really paid much attention to politics until Trump got in, and I've been listening to your show, and I really appreciate it. But my question is if Trump seems to be rolling back like all these programs that Obama did and with the taxes, why can't, if the Democrats get in 2018 and then again in 2020, why can't they just get rid of all these tax credits and all that kind of, you know, that kind of stuff?
Because it would because of the filibuster. The filibuster allows whichever party is in the minority, and right now it's the Democrats, but after the 2018 election and probably even more likely after the 2020 election, Democrats will be in control. If out of the 100 seats in the Senate, the Constitution says that you need 50 plus one, you need a majority vote, and that one could be provided by the vice president or, you know, you get 51 votes. And law passes. But the Senate came up with this rule back, this was back at the founding of the Republic. It was back in the early 1800s, that would give the minority party the ability to block legislation if they protested. And the filibuster has at various different times taken 70 votes, 66 votes, 60 votes right now is what it's set at. And so if the Democrats take control of the House and Senate, but they don't have 60 votes in the Senate, then the Republicans can block any efforts to restart spending, to raise taxes, to do anything. And
why can't we do that now? Why can't the Democrats
do that now? Democrats are doing that right now. This is why the Republicans are twisting themselves in knots. They had to, in order to pass their tax bill, first they had to pass legislation that would allow the debt ceiling to be raised by $1.5 trillion. So they did that. Because, you know, they don't care about debt, right? Long as there's a Republican in office. And then they had to come up with a tax bill that fits within this $1.5 trillion window. And the problem is that the tax bill that they're promoting right now is going to be between $1.7 and $1.9 trillion in terms of the additional debt to the national debt. And it's actually going to be more than that because they're not including the cost of interest payments. On those occasional events when they do talk about interest payments, they're not talking about the possibility that interest rates will go up at the same time that Janet Yellen is saying she's going to raise interest rates next month. So it's just a scam, 16 ways to Sunday. But the problem is that they're going to be able to pass it with 50 votes if they can keep their math straight. And that's increasingly looking like a pretty big if right now, although, you know, we'll see where it goes.
Because you said 50 votes and then the vice president could be the breaking vote, but you said earlier it had to be like 70 or 60 votes. Why can't it still be 70 or 60? Why does it have to be just 50? You know what I'm saying? Do you kind of get what I'm asking or no?
No, try it again.
Okay, well, you said earlier with the filibuster, the Democrats are trying, they have to have 50 votes, right?
They'd have to have 60 votes.
60 votes. So they're going to have 60 votes of the Republic, but there's not 50 or how many? There's only, what, 53 in the Congress?
Yeah, there's 52 Republicans right now and 48, if you include the independents, you know, Bernie and Angus King, who've,
right.
who caucus with the Democrats.
So they are voting for the tax, too, then, these other people?
No.
60 votes?
No. The Republicans have 52 votes right now in the Senate. The
right.
question is, how many votes will each party have after November 2018, in January of 2019?
Right.
And you've got some senators who are just giving up and leaving, like Jeff Flake.
Right.
You've got
yeah.
other senators, you know, like Ron Johnson, Wisconsin, who are incredibly vulnerable.
Right.
Rob Portman in Ohio, I believe. And so the question, you know, that everybody is trying to work around is what will it all look like? And the point that Bruce Bartlett was making in his editorial for The Guardian today, and this was, you know, I think absolutely fascinating and a little chilling. The argument that Bruce Bartlett was making is that these tax cuts that the Republicans are putting in place are going to necessitate spending cuts, or you're going to have to raise the debt ceiling again as you know, a couple of years out, right? This stuff doesn't kick in until it begins to kick in next year, and then the year after that, the year after that. And that because of all these cuts that are going to be necessary, that Democrats, even though they have power, will not have absolute power. They won't have that. They, in all probability, you're not going to have 60 Democratic senators after next year's elections. You know, it's possible, but it's extremely unlikely. And therefore,
so if they did get 60,
pardon?
If they got 60, then could they eliminate it if they did get 60?
Mm-hmm.
Like if there was 60 in there, they can cut
yes.
back all this.
Yes, if we had 60 Democrats in the Senate and Democrats took control of the House of Representatives, which is 23 votes or 23 seats that we'd have to flip, which, again, is a pretty heavy lift,
right.
even though the majority of Americans vote for Democrats for the House of Representatives. The majority of the House
right.
is Republican because of gerrymandering. So, you know, you get
right.
a state like Ohio that's roughly 50-50 and they end up with, you know, what is it, seven Republicans and three Democrats, as I recall. Maybe I'm thinking of Pennsylvania, but whatever it is, you know, that is baked into the cake. That's institutional. So
right.
the other thing that Bruce Bartlett is pointing out, or the main thing that he's pointing out, and I think it's a really big point that we all need to pay attention to, is if the Republicans lose what appears to be their power. And see, this is what happened during the Obama years, particularly the first 2 years of the Obama administration. You know, they got a lot of good stuff done, but they only had 74 days where they had 60 votes, where they could overcome a filibuster. 74 business days, and that had to do with Ted Kennedy dying and Scott Brown being sworn in and all this other kind of stuff. And as a result, a lot of really great legislation, I mean, Nancy Pelosi got legislation out of the House that would have really radically dialed back offshoring of our jobs. And guess what? It got more than 50 votes in the Senate, but it was filibustered by the Republicans. And so the Democrats took the blame for not doing something about offshoring, even though it was the Republicans' blame. And that's what Bruce Bartlett's pointing out is the brutal, brutal politics of this. And thanks for the call, and thanks for listening to us in Hammond, Indiana. Much appreciated. Thank you all for being with us today. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. In the meantime, don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It requires all of us. That includes you. So get out there, get active, tag. You're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.